Good morning. My name is Andrew. I'm an alcoholic. Can we have a moment of silence, please, for gratitude of the AA recoveries of the past 75 years? Our topic today is the seventh tradition, self-support. My home group is the No Name Group in Missoula, Montana. I have the pleasure of serving Area 40, which is basically the whole state of Montana, as the Panel 57 delegate to the General Service Conference. And at the General Service Conference, I had the pleasure of serving on the Finance Committee. For the 58th General Service Conference, I had the pleasure of chairing the Finance Committee. So I've been thinking about the seven tradition quite a lot and self-support. It's something that is near and dear to me. I certainly was not self-supporting when I came into this program, so it's nice to be able to be self-supporting and think about applying that to myself, my group, my area, my district, and AA as a whole. So we have three speakers today who are going to share with us. Each is going to take approximately 20 to 25 minutes, and I'll give you guys about a heads up when you've gone 20 minutes, so you can take another 5 or 10 to close it up. Our first speaker today is going to be Monica M. from Wisconsin.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Monica Mutchler, and I'm an alcoholic. I was hoping he was going to go the way the program went, but the seventh tradition, I'm just going to read that, the long form. The AA groups themselves ought to be fully self-supported by the voluntary contribution of their own members. So at this time, if somebody has a hat, can we pass it for me? Oh, okay. We think that each group should soon achieve its ideal that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies. That acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying any obligation whatever is unwise. Then, too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. Well, I love all the traditions. I especially love the seventh tradition because it can be applied in so many ways in so many areas of our lives and groups and et cetera. I am a reader. It goes in one eye and out the other, I guess. And I did some reading. I can't remember anything, but some of the interesting things to me were that early AA was not self-supporting. Some people would say that it's not really self-supporting today either. But I guess I can relate that to myself because I certainly wasn't self-supporting and hadn't been for a number of years. I hadn't been my whole life in any area of my life. And it took me a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous to become self-supporting. I can remember when I was new, I thought, oh, great, I love this, that, we don't have to pay, we don't have to contribute anything, and I can come and take. I was really good at that. And my sponsor, I can't remember her exact words at the time, who said something to the effect that, Monica, even though we don't have to contribute, it's a really good idea to contribute, to put money in the basket at every meeting you go to. For a number of reasons. And the reason that hit me really was that you'll feel more a part of, that you belong, that you're a member. And I kind of looked at her, and I wasn't one prior to that time to follow directions or anything, but I started doing that, and it did make a difference. It did make a difference. I felt more a part of. I felt a member. I felt I could contribute to the group. So that was very, very important to me. But then I had these big decisions to make. I had about a 15, 20-minute drive into the meetings, and I wanted to stop and buy my soda. We say soda in Wisconsin. And cigarettes, and a candy bar probably. But, you know, when I had a couple of bucks in my pocket, I had to make these decisions. So I cut down on all that. And I started drinking coffee at the meetings, and I borrowed cigarettes. For a little while anyway. But things like that. But those are the decisions I had to make. What's more important to me? What's more important? And that's where I was at the time. I think it's also very interesting that one of the things I read was that, you know, two very diverse people were very instrumental in the formation of the seventh tradition. And one was St. Francis of Assisi, and one was John D. Rockefeller, as you all know, probably, and not wanting money to spoil what we have here. And we talk about this program being divine intervention. You know, it certainly is. It certainly is. You think of us as a bunch of drunks, thinking that large sums of money would make us irresponsible and divert us from our primary purpose, the fifth tradition. So just so grateful for all this that happened before me. How many of you were there last night? Everybody, I hope, and saw all the big book covers on the screen before the meeting and all the flags from all the different countries. And I think I have this right, that AA is now in 180 countries and the big book has been translated into 58 different languages. Amazing. I mean, that's the seventh tradition. I get goosebumps when I think about that, that it is being made so available for everybody. And that's the seventh tradition, whatever the service is. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. My then husband came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And we'd had a mighty row one drunken night. And he'd stayed up watching TV and saw a public service announcement on TV, late night TV, before they had 24 everything on TV, you know. And he called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I tagged along with him to an open meeting, and I saw the steps on the wall, and I figured there ain't no way I'm ever doing the fourth and fifth steps, so I didn't come for a little while. But I wouldn't have been here probably. Who knows if I would have been here or not. But at that time, that's how he came at that time to Alcoholics Anonymous. Those things cost money. I don't know what they cost then. 30, 50 grand. I don't, maybe some delegates know what they cost now. I don't know. But they do cost a lot of money. And those are the reasons why we have the seventh tradition. Becoming self-supporting. Oh, man. You know, there's kind of a reverse thing to this, too, that sometimes I've heard this. This has happened to any groups that I go to, but some facilities or churches or something where meetings are held say, oh, you know, we like to have you here. We don't need to pay rent, kind of thing. Well, it's very important that we pay rent, that we pay our own way, type of thing. But that self-supporting, I was so dependent on other people and for the most number of years before I came to AA on my then husband for not only financially but emotionally, probably spiritually, all that on him. And coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps, I'm fortunate to belong to a very active group. I don't think I mentioned my group. It's the Badger Group in Brookfield, Wisconsin. So if you're ever in the Milwaukee area, look us up. We're very, very active and like to have a lot of fun. And I lost my train of thought. Oh, but through working the steps, the group is very, every time we have a business meeting, everything goes back to the traditions and the concepts. Goes back to that. Very, very active in our groups. And learning about the traditions, working the steps, you know, becoming a responsible person in society. Very, very important. And that to me is all part of the self-support. I was never a very responsible person. I don't know if any of you can relate to that or not, but and so it was. And I can remember I was sober a while, and I'd had Somebody said yesterday in a panel that, you know, when we're self-employed, we're really unemployed. Marianne's laughing. Self-employed for a number of years. So sometimes I wasn't unemployed. Sometimes I was making money, you know. And I just lost it again. But I've been sober a while and just becoming, you know, a responsible human being in all areas of my life. And having to make those decisions, as I mentioned earlier, about what to do with my money. You know, when I didn't have any money, I was very, very irresponsible and not self-supporting. And times that I did have money, at that time I was very, very irresponsible and consequently didn't have money kind of thing. And was not self-supporting. I can remember I'd been sober a while. I'd gone through a divorce and lots of times did not know where my next paycheck was coming from. And I had to call my father and ask for a loan. And I was so humiliated by having to do that. I didn't know where to turn. You know, I was such and such an age, sober this long. And, you know, not one question at all. He said, sure, how much kind of thing. And it was a Sunday. And I hung up the phone and I was crying because it was just, you know, Monica, what are you doing? You know, and it was a real turning point for me. I would take out loans and take out another loan to pay that loan and that kind of stuff. And he sent me a check and I cashed it. And I, you know, until it was paid off, I said, OK, I'll pay you this much a month. And he said, no, don't worry about it, whatever you can do. But I wrote him a check every month. And that was the first check I wrote. And I think from mostly that point on became more self-supporting. Then in all areas of my life, getting more involved in my group. We have traditions meetings once a month, and so once a year the seventh tradition comes up, and people have shared the fact that, you know, when we're new or when we're not so new, as I just mentioned, money is a problem, and it's hard to, if you're going to a lot of meetings, contribute to every meeting. But there's other ways to contribute and be self-supporting. And, you know, setting up chairs, cleaning the ashtrays that we used to do years ago, all that stuff. Making phone calls, being there early, reaching out our hand, that kind of thing. Being there to give, not to just take type of thing. So those are some of the things that can be done. Also, one thing our group does, we've copied just about everything we do from other groups. And one thing we do is we had a San Antonio savings plan. We had a Toronto savings plan 5 years ago, 8 years ago, 9 years ago. And what we did was we started, I don't know, 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, setting up a savings plan where members of the group could contribute so much a week and set up a savings plan so they could all afford to come to this wonderful conference. And I can't tell you how many members of the group were involved in this, collecting money every week, keeping track of it, that kind of thing. What a wonderful thing it was and is. And you know, hopefully it'll be done next time, too, because we had 100 people from our group come from Wisconsin. So that what a wonderful thing. I am also in the reading that I did. It's just amazing to me how all this comes together and how it works and how it came together. I'm glad I'm here now and not then and had to go through all that. But I'm glad I'm here now. I don't think I'm going to talk for my 20 minutes, but I did read something that I just want to share. Gary Glynn, who's a past chairman of the General Service Board, had an article, and something that's so true with me, so many of these topics, he said that I discovered the seventh tradition really isn't about money. It's really about gratitude and participation and a desire to help carry the message to a wider world than what you find in your own group or neighborhood. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Monica. When I was in early sobriety, one of my first sponsors talked to me a lot about the spiritual precedence to the steps, that there is a lot of history behind those steps and where those principles came from. But then he talked about one of the things that really sets us apart in Alcoholics Anonymous is the traditions. And that's how we're different from many, many other organizations. One of the things I had an opportunity to do was talk to some of the Class A trustees. And you saw one last night in Ward Ewing. And I was speaking to another one who was at the time the treasurer of the General Service Board, Class A trustee, non-alcoholic trustee. And he says he's gotten asked over the years to serve on a number of corporate boards such as this. And he says usually what he hears after he gets asked to join the board is, how much can you contribute to that organization? And he said it stunned him when he was asked if he was interested in possibly serving on the AA General Service Board. And then they told him, you cannot contribute. He says that was a very unusual thing as an organization. And this one, especially the Seventh Tradition, it came out so much by providence. You know, this was not the vision that Bill had. When they sold stock, I've seen those stock certificates. They're quite interesting in Works Publishing. And you could buy those. This was going to be a money-making operation on the big book. And it was just by providence, as Monica mentioned, John D. Rockefeller said that, you know, let's not mess this up. So our second speaker is going to be Keith M. from Utah.
My name is Keith, and I am an alcoholic. What an awesome, awesome thing. My sobriety date is September the 21st of 1991, and my first sponsor, Max Y., who is sitting up in that big meeting in the sky, taking great pleasure at what I've got myself into this time. You see, both Max and I are from a small town in southeastern Utah. We have a population of about 5,000 people with a dozen meetings a week. A big meeting in Moab has 15 people, more likely to have 4 or 5. To say the least, I am slightly overwhelmed. But I need to thank Rick, the International Convention Coordinator, for this tremendous opportunity. When I called to confirm my willingness, I still am not as honest as I might be. I did say willingness. To be here today, I was breathless. The nice lady that answered the phone at GSO suggested that I take a breath. They're full of wisdom. So I think maybe a breath is in order. The short form of the Seventh Tradition reads, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And when you read that, you get an impression real quick that we're talking about money. I'm not so sure. My first experience with this tradition was in very early sobriety. I was no more than 2 weeks sober, and I was not well. You guys probably can't relate with coming in here not well, but I was not well. But I was incredibly needy and desiring what you had. I got here, I looked in your eyes, and I saw hope. And you looked back and told me to keep coming back. And that you had a genuine thought, at least I can perceived it, that you wanted me to be there. But there was parts of this that scared me. You said, come early and stay late. Well, after the meeting, I figured that if you actually had any conversations with me, you'd figure out that I was really pretty sick, and maybe you really didn't want me. So I was very apprehensive with having conversations. I was also didn't really have any clue what we might talk about. So I was standing next to the coffee pot, and I looked down, and the trash can is just overflowing with towels and papers and cups and these kind of things. And I asked an elderly gentleman, who happened to be Max, this was before he became my sponsor, and I just said, well, who dumps this? And he looked right back, because he was always real quick with his wit, and he goes, well, you do. So I did. And I went in the rest of the rooms, and I dumped the trash cans. And I'm not the quickest, so I would sit during meetings, and I would actually watch the trash can to see if maybe you would make a deposit into my spiritual container, so that I, after the meeting, would have something to do besides talk to you. Well, my service has continued on since then. But people that know the story I have shared in the past will come up to me every once in a while at a business meeting when I seem to be maybe slightly more opinionated than they thought I should be, and suggest that maybe I should do some more spiritual work with the trash cans. As usual, this tradition was written and ratified after the principle was well established within the fellowship. In the beginning, more than one of our founders would have had no problem in taking a few thousand dollars from the wealthy Rockefellers of our time. Maybe even a few hundred thousand. Just think of the drunks we could save with $500,000. But no, the fellowship received more than a few rejections, providence, from the large donors of those early days. The founders had a good understanding of our primary principle. The purpose of this program early on and today is the basic simple principle, one drunk sharing with another. The fellowship as a whole then and now understand that no amount of money could have paid for 12-step work or the continued sponsorship of new members. Some of this relationship lasts lifetimes, involves hundreds of thousands of hours. With misgivings and a few hard feelings, Bill, Bob, and the other old-timers accepted that AA needed to be poor. We had to pay our own way. Goodness knows that the majority of our lives had been spent not being self-supporting, but we needed to do it in recovery. The fellowship needed just enough to cover expenses plus a prudent reserve. The idea became AA's financial principle then and now. Corporate poverty seems to be more of a spiritual principle than a financial principle. I think if you're buzzing around in the finances and you go to banks and you go to other places and you talk about your financial principle being corporate poverty, and you want just enough to cover expenses and maybe enough in case it doesn't come in quick enough with a prudent reserve, they're not really going to think that you're a true entity in a corporation. But we are, because it is spiritual. Another financial principle is accepting willed money from AA members who were part of the fellowship who have passed away. The difficulty with this concept to the founders, as I was reading, is the logic that whoever pays the piper calls the tune. Well, it doesn't seem to apply. If they pass away, how can they be telling us what to do? However, the same general principle was accepted. We pay our own way. GSO limits contributions, or suggests, they don't really, I don't think they're going to send out somebody. I don't know what would happen if you send a large $4,000 or $5,000 donation to GSO. I have a feeling they'd send it back. I haven't tried it. Maybe, nah. Anyway, they limit it to $3,000 per year, dead or alive. But if you think about that principle for a second, and I read some early stuff and they had thought about it. We come from all walks of life. We come from all sections and variety of society. If you do the math, there's a few percentage of us that are going to do well somewhere in our lives. They probably are going to put a few shackles together and we're going to have some inheritance if we chose to. If you do the math and you look at the numbers, It could easily have mounted to millions. Think of the problems that would have created. Just consider, we now have 100 million instead of the few millions that we have to meet our expenses. Yeah. A few statistics from GSO suggest the fellowship spends about $7 per member per year, with the average member contributing about $5 per year. Personally, I'm way ahead of the game. I put $2 in the hat per meeting, and some days I go to more than one meeting. With an average of two or three meetings per week, that's about $200 or $300 per year. I always was an overachiever. Huh, Max? Wait a minute. This is the money I give my home group. Not directly to GSO. So I looked into it a little bit. If we consider that my donation goes to my home group, and the home group right now gives about $20 per month to GSO, that's 30 cents per member, or $4 a year. I'm well below the national average. Maybe I'm not an overachiever. The facts are facts. Statistics are real. We are a cheap lot. I have observed during my recovery incredible acts of kindness and generosity one-to-one in the fellowship. Members have traveled thousands of miles for a 12-step call, given hundreds of personal hours of time, and then we let the basket go by without a thought or a misgiving. Back to the cost per member and the donations. If they're spending seven per member and we're only getting five, where does the shortfall come from? Book sales. The big book has saved our collective bacon more than once on a number of levels. Yep, it's literature sales. Literature sales contributes about $2 per member to services each year. If we as a whole could donate just a little bit more, instead of that 30 cents, maybe 40 cents per member, the cost of the big books would go down. Maybe big books could be free for all newcomers. However, I'm not sure that's a good idea. Newcomers need to be self-supporting, too. The ever-escalating price of the big book is alarming. A few years ago, when I got sober, the difference between a $4.50 book and a $9 book meant that I was not going to have the $9 book. We may be pricing some of our newcomers out of having the literature that they truly need. I think we've been putting a buck in the basket for a long time. I've been doing it for at least the 18 years of my sobriety. Inflation is real. I do not know that I truly understand it. However, $2, $3, $4 in the basket may be necessary for your home group to function. A past delegate from the great state of Alaska helped me with a dilemma a few years ago. I was traveling a lot and only attending a few meetings per month at my home group. My monthly donations had dropped from 25 a month down to maybe 6, and the group balance sheet noticed. Self-support means carrying my own weight. If I want a healthy home group, I need to donate even if I am not there, so that meeting will be there when I need it. So now, and since that time, I donate $30 a month, even when I'm in the great state of Texas. One last story. My home group meets in a small recovery club. It's not an Alano club, but it's somewhat similar. The club was built by members of the local Moab Fellowship back in the uranium boom of the 50s and 60s. It's a very pleasant wood frame structure with blue aluminum siding, two interior rooms, a small kitchen, and a couple of restrooms. The 1,500-square-foot area can accommodate 70 to 80 members and a dozen Al-Anons in the smaller room. A few years ago, it was noticed that 50 years of drunks having 7 to 12 meetings a week had taken its toll on the appearance of Old Triangle House. The annual maintenance had kept the place functioning, but it was looking a little shabby. So my home group business meeting suggested to the nonprofit building board committee that maybe we needed a facelift. The building board got excited. With a few thousand dollars of capital improvement funds saved up over the years, it came up with a number of good ideas. Included but not limited to new carpet, painting inside and out, and the old AA clubhouse is now a desert sand with big blue shutters. There's also a batch of new plants out front to improve the landscaping. The building board, as I stated, it started off with years of accumulated funds and an adequate prudent reserve. Soon, they ran out of money. With the building board funds low, the building board decided to raise the rent on those AA meetings. Now, of course, all the building board members attended those AA meetings. Only AAs can create an us and them situation within ourselves. The majority of these members were local business types, well aware that a rental on this type of structure in downtown tourist Moab was about $5,000 per month. So, increasing the rent from $65 a month to $160 a month seemed like a reasonable idea. The problem was, is the AA group was struggling to make it at $65. After a couple of years, the group's prudent reserve was nearly depleted. The Moab group had not donated to area or GSO for at least a year. And there was no travel budget for the GSR. Why things have to go to such an extreme before we notice is an enigma. It happened in our personal lives, and it occasionally happens in our recovery. The Moab group was still holding regular meetings. Newcomers were getting sober or not. Old-timers were still 12-stepping. The new folk, big book studies, were still reading the big book. However, the group services were suffering or not happening at all. We as a group had sponsored a local jail meeting for more than 15 years, but it had stopped. We had a beautiful meeting house, but our house was not in order. The GSR resigned. We had collectively lost our primary purpose. During the monthly home group business meetings, we started talking about the needs, our spiritual needs. We needed to become part of AA as a whole. We needed to donate something to GSO and area. The amount of that donation was not as important as becoming part of AA as a whole. After many months, truly a campaign of communication about the need, I can now report we are donating $20 a month to both area and GSO, and we're setting aside $50 for the GSR travel defrayment. After only 8 months of explaining the spiritual need for more funding, the Moab group now has $1,900 over its $500 prudent reserve. Maybe too much money. Self-support for my home group seems to be a balancing act. Money for group services and building improvements are spiritual concepts that we need to talk about. It's all about communicating. I would like to end with another reading of the long form of the seventh tradition. The AA groups themselves ought to be fully self-supported by a voluntary contribution of their own members. We think each group should be soon achieving this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using AA or Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or outside agencies. The acceptance of large gifts from any source or contribution carrying any obligation whatsoever is unwise. Then, too, we view with much concern those AA treasures which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. It's the spiritual heritage that I wanted to read there. If you read the first one, it talks about contributions. It doesn't talk about contributions in the long form that much. I think that the service that we do is part of our self-support. So, it's an important tradition. I heard the other day that we shouldn't talk to newcomers about it. I think that's wrong. I think the newcomers need to hear about the traditions from the beginning. They've made my life so much more meaningful. And let's not forget the concepts. I personally have a company, got a few employees. Many of them don't even know I'm in the program. But the principles of my company are based on the concepts. If I ask them something to do a job, I give them the right of decision of how to do that. I give them the right of participation in that job. And it has meant that I am successful. Without this program, I could never have run a business. Well, okay, I could have run it into the ground. But I would not be successful as I am. I would not have the happy employees that I do. They're part of. And they don't even know where it came from. But you know what? That's all right. It came from you guys. You've given me my life, and it's worth living today. Thanks.
Thank you, Keith. One of the pleasures that we have when you serve as a delegate is every other year you get to go visit Stepping Stones. And for those of you who don't know, Stepping Stones was the last home of Bill and Lois Wilson. It's a wonderful little spot. One of my favorite things there is up on a little hill out for the main house, he's got his little study called Wits End. Wits End is where he did a lot of the writing on the 12 traditions and 12 steps and 12 traditions, the 12 and 12. But one of the things I learned when I got to visit that is that Bill and Lois loved that house, and they decided together, and Bill approached the board of Alcoholics Anonymous, General Service Board, and he said, I love this house so much, I don't want to see anything happen to it after we're gone, so I want to donate it to AA. He wanted to give the whole house to AA. And he knew, obviously Bill knew about our traditions. Yeah, he knew about the seventh tradition, but he thought an exception should be made in his case. Who knew? But the board was able to say, no, we have this tradition, and it's a great tradition, and it's a good reason. And so he said, thank you, but no thank you, even to Bill. So that's a separate institution now. They've actually got the Stepping Stone Foundation, which is completely separate from Alcoholics Anonymous. They said no to that donation of a whole house. They didn't want that property. So I think it's even applies, this principle even applies to Bill Wilson. So that's important for me to remember as well. So our last speaker today is going to be Rosemary P. from New York.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rosemary. I'm an alcoholic. And boy, was that loud. I'm a member of the Penfield Friday Night Group, which is near Rochester, New York. If ever you're around Rochester, New York on a Friday night, please come visit us in the town of Penfield. I want to thank the convention committee for giving me this opportunity to share my experience with our seventh tradition and my hope for its future in our fellowship. And I want to thank all of you for being here this morning, especially as we're competing with the other convention hall meeting. And I think you all know who I mean. So I am very thrilled that people are here and are interested in our seventh tradition. The self-support, the seventh tradition, is our topic this morning. And both Monica and Keith did a beautiful job of explaining the spiritual end, the money end, and how it affects all aspects of our sobriety when it comes down to it. How did a bunch of alcoholics ever come up with the idea of supporting themselves, paying their own way, not accepting any outside financial aid? Isn't that unheard of? In the early days of AA, we were poor, dirt poor. And the idea of raising funds for this most noble cause seemed sensible and very possible. After all, some of our early members had connections in high places. As most of you know, it was one of these connections, John D. Rockefeller Jr., a very wealthy individual, who first put the kink in our expectations of being taken care of. He said large sums of money would spoil us. How did he know? He really did set the stage for us. But at that time, we didn't know how often we would be tempted to accept money from outside our fellowship, or even large sums of money from within our fellowship. We had to keep learning the lesson over and over until our experience brought us to the establishment of the principles behind the seventh tradition. Two of these principles I'd like to mention here. The first is taken from a quote in the 12 and 12, which says in part, "Whoever pays the piper is apt to call the tune." It is vitally important to us and our future that we are responsible for the content of our message without any interference or direction from outside forces. This will ensure our message stays focused, intact, and undiluted. The second principle I wish to mention is financial prudence. I'm going to put my glasses up here. I don't seem to need them. Our tendency to distrust and question mightily anyone who handles our dollars is evident in most discussions we have about money in our groups, our intergroups, and our areas. Many of us here have been involved in our own home groups' money discussions. How to get more, how to spend it when we get it, and who to trust with it. These discussions, sometimes heated, also go on in our intergroups and our areas. This is over fairly small sums of money. Can you imagine how big a harangue it would be if we had large sums coming into AA from outside sources? Because of this, some will argue that money and spirituality do not mix. But we have also learned that in order for our message to continue being available to any who need it, services must be provided, and that takes money. So yes, money and spirituality do not mix, except in the basket. What we try for is enough funds to cover our operating expenses plus a modest reserve. The rest to be distributed to our other service entities for them to carry out the services which we cannot do from our groups. I'd like to share a bit on what the seventh tradition means for me as an individual, what it means for the group, and what it means for the district, what it means for the area, and lastly, what it means for our general service office. This tradition talks to me on a personal level. My track record for managing money was not good when I was out there flailing around in the sea of alcoholism. I'm not sure how much better it is today, other than that I have learned for me, money must be earned, and in order to keep it, I must be willing to give it away. I didn't know those two things before I came here. I was a widow who was left with some bit of money that I thought was enough to last me forever. I was extravagant and careless and very soon learned that I needed to get a job if I wanted to maintain the standard to which I had become accustomed. I was now responsible for my own financial security. I wasn't to lean on others for that kind of support. I was able to get and keep meaningful employment. It was a means towards independent living. Personally, I've never been much of a saver, either of money or of property. I wasn't, and still am not, a rainy day type person. My philosophy, if that's what you would call it, was you can't take it with you, so spend it now on what you want. Self-serving to the extreme. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1980, I started to hear about self-support in meetings when they passed the basket. I also heard over and over again that we must give it away in order to keep it. Even though that meant something else, I also took it to mean that I couldn't be selfish with my money, spending it only on the things I wanted. Very slowly, I loosened my grip around my checkbook and started to support various charities, which I had never done before. I was able to help someone out when they were in a bind rather than look the other way. And I was able to pay my creditors on time rather than put them off, and they were pleased with that. The result of these lessons have been that I have always had enough money to meet my needs and, lo and behold, many of my wants. It gives me a sense of belonging when I participate in the seventh tradition. Whether I can put in a dime or a dollar or perhaps more, according to my resources, I become a vital part of sustaining this great organization. I am helping to ensure that we will be here for alcoholics yet to come. By putting it in the hat, I am demonstrating my ownership and stewardship, that I care about our existence, that I am responsible for our message by not allowing any outside sources to influence our thinking and our actions. I would like now to touch on my home group. I've always had a home group in AA that was impressed upon me very early in my sobriety. In our group conscience meetings, I started to see how the seventh tradition was practiced. There was this thing called prudent reserve. That, I learned, was the rainy day money which was held aside, a very meager amount, mind you, after necessary expenses, including the expenses of the group service people, were met and this rainy day money was set aside, the group gave the rest away. What a concept. It went mostly to our local intergroup, some to the general service office, and the remaining to the area. District workshops were not supported when I came in, and now they are when they are active. What this taught us as members of a home group was that no matter what fears we had that there would not be enough if we gave it away, we always had enough money to carry the message in the group. Things such as providing medallions and having picnics, dances, and parties were not what we should be spent doing with the basket money. Those things we could pay for out of our own pockets if we wanted them, outside of the meeting time. How does the district fit into this self-support tradition? When I became a General Service Representative, or GSR, I was introduced to the district, which held a GSR workshop once a month. At that time, it was mostly a teaching medium where the GSRs learned about the traditions. We had coffee, which was funded by an expense collection at each workshop. We were very small and really didn't venture outside our monthly workshop meetings. But as time went on, the workshop became more active and asked the local groups to support their service needs. Now they had money to rent halls in order to put on days of sharing. The district's main responsibility regarding this tradition is not to build up a huge fund, but to use the monies they are given by the groups to carry their message of service to all the groups in their districts. They do this by putting on these days of sharing and by financially supporting their district committee members when they attend service-related events in their areas or regions. These DCMs are naturally obligated to report back to their GSRs what they have seen and what they have learned. I have witnessed the guidance of the seventh tradition also in our central New York area, as it should permeate the thinking of our whole fellowship. Our groups support our area in its activities and our service people in their roles as our trusted servants. Our area exercises their responsibility by using the monies wisely. They also have a prudent reserve in place, and when exceeded, send the excess funds on to the General Service Office for their needs. Now, lastly, the General Service Office. Our responsibility to the office, and the office's responsibility to the fellowship. The General Service Office is where the buck stops, literally. The way it should work is that they would receive the fallout of excess funds from all of us. As the upside-down triangle indicates, you would think that this funneling down would work with the money also. Sad to say, it doesn't, and it hasn't, ever. We as a fellowship have never supported all of the services that we expect our office to carry out, thus the need for the publishing company income. On the other hand, the General Service Office has a responsibility to the fellowship not to spend excessively and to be wise and prudent in its choices of expenditures. The office needs to look at ways to trim unnecessary spending in day-to-day operations and search out and eliminate waste where possible. All that I have spoken of is the ideal. However, the majority, not the minority, of the AA groups do not part with their excess funds when they have them. How are we supporting AA now? Some of us make a big show of our generosity and our prosperity, making sure others know how selfless and successful we have become. It's great food for our ego. But are we willing to put more money into the basket, folded, so no one else knows how much we're putting in? Are we willing to send our birthday contribution in on our anniversary? If our home group gives us expense money, which we really don't need, do we make a show of not accepting it, or do we take it and then return it through the basket collection unannounced? Back in 1941, Bill asked the groups to send in $1 per member per year so that the office expenses could be met without using book money to provide services. With upwards of 1.5 million members in the United States and Canada today, if each member contributed per year what we spend on coffee drinks per month, we probably would not have to support our services with publishing income. Another quote from the 12 and 12 in part says, maybe the groups will never fully support the office. Wouldn't it be a real show of financial responsibility and independence if we did? Again, fear of not having enough and ignorance about what services are being done for them seem to be the governing rule. And unfortunately, at this time in our nation's history, money is not as free-flowing as it once was. I wonder if this is the result of not giving it away in order to keep it. My hope, our hope, is that we will use all of our resources as He will have us use them. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the convention.
Thank you, Rosemary. Very nice. So we've got a little extra time. I'm going to take a few minutes here just to do some closing remarks, and then we'll let you go to your next meeting. So many things I could talk about on this topic, but this is one of the things I wanted to talk about. One of the times I was making a presentation as a delegate, and I started talking about the finances, and somebody shouted up. They actually spoke up while I was talking about money and numbers, and they said spirituality and money don't mix. Actually, despite the fact we have a pamphlet to the contrary, they thought this, that where God is concerned, he doesn't mix with money. And I know that personally speaking and applying the steps in my life, finance and romance, the two, we're not talking about romance today, but finance and romance were the two areas which I found the most difficult to let God in completely. Because that's where I want what I want in both those areas, financially as well. And in terms of letting God into my life, even in the finances, even in my work, even in what I do contribute to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's so important. And I think it's so important at the group level as well, to make sure to take an active role. I mean, so many of us, I certainly did for many years, avoid business meetings. I don't know how many of you avoid your home group's business meetings, if you have a home group. But I make a point of going to my home group's business meeting. And I make a point of knowing what we are doing with our funds. Do we contribute to the district, to the area, to the general service office? This is so important in a lot of ways, is what Bill and Bob gave us in terms of turning Alcoholics Anonymous over to us. And I think that's important financially as well, is that when I contribute to my group, when my group contributes to the general service office, that what we are is, this is ours. This is not us and them. This is ours. Alcoholics Anonymous belongs to us. So, I mean, that's a whole responsibility, but it's also such an inclusion. I felt a part of nothing. I was not a part of anything when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And now in Alcoholics Anonymous, to borrow a poker term, I'm all in. I'm holding nothing back. And that's a wonderful feeling. If you haven't gotten there yet, if you're still feeling like you're on the edge of the herd, I encourage you to jump all in. It's a wonderful feeling to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous and be all in this. And that's been true financially, as well as my time and my effort. And I love carrying that message, but I also love talking about Alcoholics Anonymous with other alcoholics. And having that time, money, you name it. I realized that when I first sobered up, you know, in terms of talking about, when I was putting a buck in the basket early on in sobriety, that was a heck of a lot more than certainly of my financial means at the time than if I'm doing the same now, putting a buck in the basket. You know, that's such a thing that we have to get away from. One of the things I did see that was really new on this topic, if you've been out in the main area, the registration there, they have it up there. They have a nice sign of one of the web pages. You can actually donate online now. A very new thing, just started. If you want to do your birthday contribution, you can do it online. You can just go to the AA website, Services for Members. You can follow it, and there's now online contributions. For me, at least, I'm inherently lazy. It may not sound like it, but I'm inherently lazy. So if there's one less barrier for me, I don't have to put a stamp on the birthday envelope. It's a wonderful little thing. That's just that much more likely for me to make that contribution. So I'm glad we just started doing this. Alcoholics Anonymous is slow to adopt new technology. That's all right. At least we're doing it slowly. So I'm glad that we're doing that. If you haven't tried that, check it out online. If you check it out in the main hall, you can see what it looks like. Still going to make sure that it's only contributions from alcoholics. But we are doing that even online, even for the online contributions. So, I know you guys are all the diehards in here, coming in, hearing about the seventh tradition, hearing about that spiritual principle and how it applies in our groups and in our own lives. And I thank you all for your attention today.